First of all, I want to repeat that these recommendations are preliminary, and we anticipate that by the end of this meeting, a number of them will be refined, others will be eliminated, and we expect there might be some added. The preliminary recommendation came from a variety of sources. First of all, we reviewed about 20 previous reports from recommendations from groups that had met earlier on access issues in the last couple of years, and pulled recommendations from those. We also looked at other states, what kind of practices they've implemented and are using to increase access in their state. We have pulled ideas from the task force discussion in the earlier meeting. And we've also listened to a variety of stakeholders and their thoughts and issues as far as recommendations. So what you have in front of you represents a combination of all of these sources of recommendations. At the end of last meeting, Mr. Roberts from the task force has reviewed and was listening to all the discussion, and he really categorized the recommendations.
Taylor.
First of all, first one is building demand for post-secondary education. The second group is then building capacity to establish post-secondary education. Let's look at building demand first. There are two main recommendation areas under building demand. First is to increase participation in post-secondary education and in targeted programs that address workforce needs. The second is motivate institutions to align their decision-making, their behavior with actual goals. In a little more detail, the first one, increase participation in post-secondary education targeted areas. This includes things such as fostering public awareness and interest in post-secondary education through a massive PR campaign that will then direct people to the fashion.org site to find out how to go to college, how to enroll, how to locate here. Second is to enhance pre-college awareness, which would involve advising in the middle school and high school level. Expanding the CROP program, which is a college reach out program to help prepare students that might otherwise not be planning to go to college to increase their interest and give them the skill set that they need. Fully implement online advising systems so the advice is available to all residents. Revise financial aid programs and tuition policies to target students and programs. This will involve Bright Futures, the FSAT, which is the E-based program for the state, prepaid tuition and tuition itself, and then also providing incentives for students to go to college and to participate in targeted programs. The second area under building demand is motivating institutions, decision-making, and behavior with the access to businesses, and so providing tuition flexibility, package deals, ensuring that institutional support is a part of the program, providing incentives for articulation from community college to university, and ensuring effective articulation mechanisms. Okay, the next area after building demand is building capacity. There are four main recommendation areas for building capacity. One is to support sector efforts to expand capacity. Two is to coordinate state policy on access to baccalaureate degrees. Three, target facilities and tackle expensive decisions. Four, maximize use of technology. So that's number one, supporting the sector efforts to expand capacity. Each sector has strategic plans, and both of them target, have goals for not only expanding general access, but also access to capacity in targeted areas. The second part is to improve the efficiency and effectiveness to make sure that it's administrative entities working together to establish regional plans and implementing current state policy and newly adopted procedures focuses on community colleges offering that variety. Third, recommendation under building capacity is to maximize the target facilities and travel expense decisions. Here, the idea is to maximize the use of existing facilities and provide alternative funding routes. Primarily, this is to look at communities that help fund some of their expenses. The fourth area is to maximize the use of technology. Here, a lot of progress has been made with distance learning options. And also to develop funding strategies to expand distance learning into new areas of public interaction that are being developed now, which develop statewide tutoring to school distance learning. So that's a high level overview.
Meant to, the way this is put forward, it's meant to address sort of, as we ended the last discussion in Jacksonville, the concept of creating demand for higher education and then trying to fulfill that demand through increased capacity, and that's sort of the way we ended up presenting these recommendations. So, any comments or questions from the task force before we move on to public comment?
I just don't see enough here in partnership with the private university sector. Just one mention of it on page 6, 3A, II, the state private universities and community colleges should share facilities. I think that talks before where a lot of the private universities have excess capacity, but students can't afford the tuition. And in many areas, such as like Barry University, with nursing, not that I'm going away from the University of Miami, but I want to draw prejudice for it. I think there's a lot of private access out there that the students cannot attend because of funding is adequate staff. And I think that in many areas, it's going to be cheaper and more economical to allow some funds, whether it be tuition subsidy or other grants, for private institutions to take some of this slack out of the system, or demand out of the system.
I think Ed Moore is going to speak on behalf of ICUP today, and probably Nancy is on behalf of Quick Independent, so I suspect we'll hear more about that subject, because I think you're probably right.
Mr. Chair,
Nancy?
Yeah, I
still
don't really saw a lot of attention in this document to the needs of our vocational students served in our adult education technical centers. And it was so silent on that issue, I actually went back to some of the original documents, the letter inviting me to join this committee. And that is a topic that was expressly included in the scope of these deliberations. And I think that twice this committee has recommitted our focus to it, we're looking at vocational and technical education, and I just don't see much of an emphasis, at all.
Yeah, we should start by, this is our document, so it should reflect what this task force wants to reflect, and from our view, I think from the beginning, that we just needed to put reflecting, as Cindy said, prior work and our discussions, a thesis on the table, and I just want to everybody feel comfortable to be adding, subtracting to this document. That's the purpose of today. So, got it. Ms. Gray?
There are a couple of points. When we look at trying to increase participation, talking to our high school students, I think we need to make an emphasis to stress careers as opposed to jobs, which is an important point, and that's really the purpose of higher education. Another thing that I think we need to look toward when we're looking at high school students try to encourage more dual enrollment for qualified students. I think that's more doable. And I think in the end it could even be much more successful, because right now there's a big emphasis on AP courses, but those AP exams are very difficult to pass. And I'm not sure what our passing rate is. My understanding is on the low side, maybe 25% or so. But that being the case, I think dual enrollment could be a good avenue to address. And then there's something else that's out there, and I know it's out on the federal level. It's been proposed in the state of Florida. And that's regarding the number of immigrant students who don't have social security numbers. And that's the DREAM Act. On the federal level, it's DREAM Act 2005. I know there's been a proposal for the DREAM Act here in Florida. I do believe, I don't know what the legal situation is on the state level as opposed to the federal level, but I think we do need to address the issue of providing appropriate funding for students who do not have social security numbers, who came to this country when they were babies, and through no fault of their own, or just as American as you and I, and have to pay exorbitantly high tuition, out-of-state tuition, when it's clear that their family cannot afford that.
Okay. Commissioner?
Just the way I read many of these recommendations, and I think if you kind of read it with, I think this is my background in the articulation coordinating council, we talk about incentives for students and participation and awareness. We're talking about financial aid. I think that we have the understanding that those recommendations involve public and private institutions. So that through those mechanisms, then, and maybe we just need to make clear that it's my understanding that they do, address both. And so I think there are ways to articulation as well, which could encourage more access to private secondary institutions. So I think if we just take some care to make sure that that's clear, then the here should go.
I have one more item here. It's okay to go out of turn unless you're going around the table.
No, no
reference to what you were saying, where residents in the state cannot afford to go to school. I don't believe this was brought up before at our earlier meetings, but at least what I've read in the paper, there's been a number of students that are not legal residents of Florida, but come occupy an apartment for a few months and take advantage of state tuition rate, whether it be at the junior college level and the four-year college level. And I think at the in the funding portion, I think we need to have probably some change in our mechanism of verification who is indeed a real state resident who just didn't come over here to get advantage of our low tuition, to create more money so the students that really need that financial aid.
I think the legislature and the Board of Governors just addressed both of those issues.
And you're exactly right. There were opportunities that we've tried to address with new rules on that.
We should be probably end up getting more specific with doing well. I will tell you, it's my recollection, I think this is true, that the AP courses passing is level three, and I think we have an over 50% of our AP kids actually get three or better in the exam. So we actually do pretty well. Dual enrollment is a fabulous way of enhancing access, and actually, we hear many stories about students who are get their high school diploma and their AA, not lots, but enough that they've moved along the process pretty well. Any other comments in terms of this overview and then as well?
I guess one observation. In looking at these recommendations, there's a lot of comments here that are really good, but it's the question is, who actually is going to do what, and what is the overlap between the different organizations? And I guess I'd set throw that on the table, because there's a lot of initiatives that are already out there, and you either have to make the decision that you're going to stop those and start over again, or you're going to somehow consolidate the initiatives, or you're going to have widespread disorganization and really a failure to meet any of these criteria. There's a lot of these things out there, so I've been somewhat concerned that there's no clarification there about who's going to do what or exactly how we're going to get that done. The other thing, there's a lot of little things, you know, we need to pay attention to academic standards in high school so that people will be prepared to get into these other things that we're trying to provide access for. And so there needs to be a continuum. There needs to be not only educating them on what's possible, but actually getting them prepared to do that.
Community colleges would love to stop spending $120 million on remediation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of questions about who tracks what. And the bottom line is, you know, this all comes back to funding. So when everything else is said and done, who's going to provide the money? And in the private sector, clearly your businesses are always following the money. And if you can incent people to do things by identifying very specifically what your goals are, are you trying to increase retention rates? Are you trying to increase graduation rates? You know, what are your goals? And why not incent all of the entities in order to accomplish those things? One of the most important things that I find in this whole report relates to regional planning, because the different areas of our state have different needs. And it's very hard to say from a statewide perspective, you know, we're going to do this plan, because it may not work in some areas. So if you have your community colleges, your universities, your private organizations, your school districts working together to meet the needs of that region, and then incent them with the cash to fund those programs that get you those goals, you've accomplished what you were looking for.
Seems to me one of the things that in light of your comment is to try to, where efforts are going on, refer to them in our recommendations. Two thoughts come to mind. One, this whole area of distance learning and technology, there's a coalition we should probably, there's lots of efforts going on, we should probably refer to that if that's what we want people to focus on as opposed to going off on their own. There's clearly at the Board of Governors work going on vis-a-vis accountability, and we should probably refer to that. There's probably a dozen other examples, but where we are aware of and can endorse the efforts, we probably should tie our recommendations in some cases to those that, as you say, ground them in what is already being done in many cases. So all of our comments and discussion today will be monitored and transcribed by both staff and by our consultants in the hope of memorializing our consensus at the end of the day.
Mr. Hinton, is the idea then that we're listening to the various presentations and then revisit this discussion
right among ourselves? Yeah, that's the idea. Yes. And there will be a multitude that we hope of written comments. Everybody couldn't either be here or wanted to be here today. And so, for example, I see on our desks that comments from a great number of university presidents, although Dr. Kavanaugh is here today, but each of the presidents have their own view, and I'm sure that we'll get a lot of other written comments, which we need to figure out how to articulate once we, over the next couple of weeks before we see a final draft.
Just a quick question to clarify. As we make our recommendations, and just kind of following up on what Ms. Ross said, the idea of the cost factor popping into my head, are we to deal with that at all? How are we going to pay for these things? And how, I guess, when we're talking about other entities doing other things, I mean, that's I think that's key. But also, how do we know? I mean, I guess that's where we rely on staff to keep us informed as to who all these other entities are and what are they doing and how are they making progress, so that we're not reinventing the wheel, we're not recommending something that's already been done, and that we're able to do so in a cost-effective manner.
great. The idea is to be as financially specific and as possible, understanding that the legislature is our partner ultimately in this, and we'll determine all this ultimately. But be as specific as possible, and not just sort of have a Christmas tree.
Exactly, because that's just not going to fly.
Right. It sort of compromises theoretically everything you do.
All comments, and if you weren't doing it, and then we can fight for it. Then we'll take it to his board, I'll take it to my board. You know, everybody will go back to their entities, their sectors, and deal with it on that level. And it's my understanding, before it's signed off and goes to the legislature, it will go through our independent, our boards, our
That's my area of concern. I want to go to where Ken was originally, and also pick up on what Carol just said. I'm probably the only person on this task force that's confused right now. So if you would be so kind as you outline to me, what's the process for today? We had an overview, and we're not going to have public hearings. Please walk us through so that as we go towards 2:30, we'll be very clear as to what the postal office.
The idea is to have public comment and then essentially readdress each of the recommendations, finalizing in an extent we can a consensus. I think
we have consensus on each recommendation today.
To the extent possible. Missing obviously some key task force members who want to weigh in, Mr. Fernandez and Mr. Taylor, among others, who have a point of view and have tried to express that. I think this task force will ultimately convey its recommendations, and the state board, the board of governors, the legislature, executive branch, universities, community colleges will all be the recipients of it. I can't, notwithstanding, I think what Ms. Roberts just said, I don't think that we're going to probably vet this through the different boards to the extent that they're really the consumers of our recommendations, not necessarily the makers of the recommendations. And so that's sort of my sense. Maybe we need to talk about that because I don't, Ms. Roberts just articulated something different than that. But so maybe that's part of, I don't know, Mr. Fair, whether that's part of your confusion.
It is part of my confusion because Carol did say that once we come to the issue, we take it back to our board, we take it back to us, and then I assume that we don't vote for it. That holds up the process.
Yeah, my sense is this task force is a separate, a body that will make a series of recommendations, and as I say, the consumers of those recommendations will be board of governors, state boards, legislators, legislature, opinion leaders, community colleges, universities, like all the constituents who are theoretically represented here.
I understand that this is an independent board, including the board of governors. I think anything that affects the university is appropriate for me to take it back to their board before I say, I as a task force member am recommending to the legislature specific changes, and you can, everybody can do it differently to their independent sector. But I will be taking it back to the board for discussion and critical because I just don't think I can speak to the board of governors, speak to the legislature for very specific changes in funding or other issues. But that's not saying that I do understand it's a task force and I understand the task force will do its work, but I'll be taking it back to the board of governors.
If no one else has any reactions to that, then I would suggest that we need to be clear as to whether or not Carol's proposed direction will impact on where we're going eventually. I would hate for us to think that the point of this work is that at the end of the day there's a document that Carol cannot support. It goes back to the Board of Governors, they decide that they cannot support it. It creates another kind of public relations problem for the task force.
That's would have to wait to see what the report is before.
Let's assume the worst, that you can't support whatever that piece of my case.
If I can't support the recommendations, which I don't expect that to happen, then I would just see one person on the task force to support the recommendation.
Well, that's good, yeah. Because I would be very clear that the support of the release of the document does not mean that we have to have support of all the external groups.
I'm just trying to take care of one person. Speaking of the board members, this is a very influential, outstanding group of volunteers. I recognize that. And I don't think we'll all agree on everything. So I understand that the task force will have its work to do. And I respect everyone's opinion, and I'm sure that we won't agree on everything. We won't agree on everything. So what for the war task?
Going back, like Ms. Bostock did to the original letters inviting us to be part of this, it was my understanding that we were supposed to bring the perspectives of the organizations that we're representing. We have 28 separate community college board of trustees. Not every university is represented by a trustee rep here, but it's the perspective that Ms. Law brings to the table here from the university that she represents, the perspective of the university person. And then collectively we get together and go through the process, and we vote on something as a group, not with the intention of saying, I'm going to take this back to St. Petersburg College Board trustees, ask for their approval, and go to Pasco, and I'll make my way to the state to make sure I've covered every group that I'm representing. I'm not representing them, I'm representing the perspective of community colleges in here, just like I think each of us are representing school boards and universities and privates. I received when I was invited to be part of this access task force.
I suspect that reflects the consensus.
Okay.
Perspective as opposed to institutional representation. That's in my view as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think we can say that often enough, because if you read some of the documents and some of the comments, the perspective is very individualized, so I don't know if you can keep that in mind, that it gives a lot of perspective.
And I don't know that anything that's being proposed or discussed is something that our constituencies are unaware of. I think they're very aware and have been actively involved. And so I can tell you that 28 different community colleges are aware of what's being discussed in the Swing Law. ICUPS on the so forth and university systems as well. So my sense is that they're not out of the loop. It's not as if they're not. We're all very, very aware. And I think that in order for us to be able to make appropriate recommendations and to be able to come back and really present something January 18th and have January 18th be the final mean point, time is of the essence. And I just, with all due respect, Carolyn, I just think that universities know what's going on. And I'm not saying don't go and present, I just have a timetable concern, unless you think it can go.
No, I think we will have a meeting before the task force, and I think you'll have a recommendation out of the task force. As chairman of the board of governors, I will take it to the board of governors. Now, the data set was voted on the task force, no. But I think it's appropriate as chairman, going back, I think, give a report to our board. Have they been kept up with it? I'm sure they have through the staff, but I haven't talked to them about it, and I will in the meeting.
Well,
that's it. So there is a time issue. We don't need to get before this task force meets. And I think as chairman of any board or a board member, you do have, I feel, a responsibility to report to my board, and I will do that. If everyone feels differently, they certainly have their rights, but I do represent the board of governors to run that.
Since you don't have a meeting before,
I'm not asking you to approve this before I let it open.
Okay,
yeah.
Data on them.
talking about building a capacity to look at enrollment on a more consistent basis than we currently can with them as well. This is a great thing. This is a great conversation to have, and it means that we will be able to represent public and private institutions equally as we talk about this. In the data that we have presented to you at every meeting since August, we have had some discussions about different approaches at looking at, for example, student demand. I'll call this a tracking issue. Dr. Abel from FSU raised some issues at the November meeting about the approaches that we use to identify and project student demand for the various sectors into the future. Met with Dr. Abel and his staff after Thanksgiving to go through the process that they use to look at the same issue and the approach that we use. And there were differences. We should have come up with data that were similar in terms of pointing direction. The approach that was used by Dr. Abel and his staff was to use published data through the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System and the Factbooks, using data that categorized students as first-time and college students, new students, if you will. The approach that we used was using individual data in the data warehouse. What we did is not use a first-time and college indicator. What we did is to take an individual enrollment and look to see if they were enrolled previously. So we actually derived our own sort of different approach. We also used age data. You recall the 18 to 24 categories or the 25 and over categories. These data weren't available in the same form in the published data. When we looked at the data, there was a difference in new entrants into the university system for 2004-2005, about 20,000 students, fairly substantial difference. And so our purpose in basically working with Dr. Abel was to look at the source of these differences, and I think we've isolated what it is. One is the approach that we use to identify first-time college students. The primary source, though, is that the published data for first-time college students dealt with only undergraduate enrollments. When we looked at graduate enrollments of all of these first-time and college students that we classified as enrollments, that accounts for the primary differences. One of the things, though, that the conversation led some discomfort with data published in our data warehouse. And so one of the efforts that we did in this is to actually use the data warehouse to replicate the data in the published reports. And we were able to do that very close to the numbers that were published. Since the data warehouse is built on the same operational data that results in the published reports, that's a good thing. And so one outcome of this is that actually staff, we have not been able to follow up with Dr. Abel and his staff, but we have more comfort with the approach that we particularly showed you in November's meeting as we walked through recently to high school graduates, the 18 to 24 and the 25 and up. So this may not come on the order of recommendations consider today, but the fact that we've worked with the Board of Governors and the university system to verify the data, the fact that we are working with private and independent institutions to be able to have a better state perspective on our post-secondary system, I think are all good outcomes for these conversations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Holden.
Thank you.
Interested in the world of getting into the database, yes?
Yes, and actually this will provide a Windows
DOE would be the collecting agency of last resort, that we probably should work with the organizations around design issues, around compatibility issues, to work with them to establish their own collection process. Excuse me. Oh,
thank you.
Yes, sir.
Whatever the data collection system would be, so that the system coordinates.